Maybe next week we'll do a gaming flashback. Yes, exactly. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 492, recorded on January 29th, 2018.
Welcome to the 492nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 325th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Things are still a little slow. They're starting to heat up a bit. So we don't really have a gaming flashback lately, although there's about a billion games I could actually do right now. Maybe next week we'll do a gaming flashback. So what have you been playing, TJ?
I think you know.
Oh, but, right. I think that game, that game that might have come out. Oh, right. Bus Simulator 3. No, actually, I saw you on Twitter complaining about some stuff in Dragon Z FighterZ.
It was not
some minor things, like, I don't know, gameplay issues in terms of imbalance, but everybody has those.
Oh, no, I was thrilled about it because that character is my main.
And that character is
Krillin.
So Beerus, the god of destruction, the cat, the purple Egyptian cat thing.
I thought it was funny.
He has a combo that I discovered that it takes five power bars, and it does 7,212 damage, which is 72% of a character's life bar.
Yeah, and you posted the clip on Twitter.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, he's at Johnny Chugs. I don't know. We just go to his Twitter feed, and I'm pretty sure you'll find it.
Yeah, it's not too far back. But yeah, it was devastatingly powerful, and I was so happy to find it because Beerus is one of my mains.
So let me ask you a question: what are the in Injustice 2? You have something called a super move. I think I saw the equivalents of that in the trailers for Dragon Fighter Z. Does it have those too?
Yeah, they're pretty easy to pull off too. Every special move in that game and super move is in fighting game terms, it's a Hadouken roll, which is a quarter circle forward or a quarter circle back, and then a button press. Every character's moves is that simple. So it's not so much technicality of how to like do the positioning on the directional pad or joystick to pull off the moves, so much as it's knowing to when to use them.
You know, when you said it's seven, I hear in my head, it's over 7,000!
Right. I wish it was over 9,000, because that would have been correct.
No, I'm just saying, they should yell that, because that's all I know about this show, is a lot of people yelling and making up powers as they go along. Just one big, massive clusterfuck of a show.
So, yeah, I don't get a lot of time to play games anymore, but Saturday I actually had a day off from both my writing and my brewery job. So I woke up at noon, and then I played.
Why am I surprised you work at a brewery? Why am I absolutely not surprised? Anybody who's met TJ, he looks like someone who eats, drinks, and sleeps beer.
It's true.
He has the beer look to him.
I also have the beer style to me. I can drink a pint in just about like 4 seconds max.
That's not something to brag about.
It is.
Well, I guess
totally
if you're in your 20s, yeah, but you know, if you're in your 30s and 40s, people are going to raise one eyebrow at you.
If I'm in my 30s or 40s, it's even more impressive that I can still do it.
Yeah.
It's like bragging you went to a hooker, you know. When you're 20, it's you brag about going to a hooker. When you're older, it's like, oh, God.
So judgmental.
Go
y'all jealous.
I don't drink beer, so I'm definitely not a beer drinker.
But
as a matter of fact, the stuff I'm one of those people to whom beer tastes like horse piss. And, you know, I found out that there's actually a chemical in beer that some people will make them taste like, ew. You know, I think I'm one of those people. I don't know if I'm lucky or unlucky, but that's the way it is.
See, and that's BS to me because these days there are so many different kinds of beer that there is one out there waiting for you. That's like saying you don't like beer nowadays is like saying you just don't like music. Any music at all.
If I have to have alcohol, I'm a bartender, for God's sake. I serve beer some, but, you know, I'm more of a mixed drink person if I drink alcohol at all. And the funny thing is alcohol has no effect on me.
We do sours, and so
alcohol has no effect on me, and since I don't drive, I don't have to worry. So,
So on Saturday, I woke up at noon, and I played from 12:30 noonish
to 4:30
to 1:30 in the morning.
Oh. So you say like beer, but you're not a video gamer if you didn't go all the way to 4:30.
It was a straight session. I didn't actually move.
Here's the question of the week that inspires me. Have you ever been so engrossed in a video game that you played until the sun came up? Yes, that's happened to me. And the games have been Pirates, Sid Meier's Pirates, the original, Civilization, obviously, and Ultima 4, to be exact. So how about you, Scott? Have you played any games that you ended up and you said, oh, shit, the sun is rising?
Yeah, Suikoden, the original first Suikoden, definitely one of those where I was just wanting to see how far I can get in one day kind of thing. I don't remember anything else. The Civilization is definitely one that I would play till very late hours.
But did you do it until the sun came up?
I don't remember, but I think so, yeah.
Okay. How about you, TJ? Anyways, how about you, TJ? What have you played till the sun rose?
I've definitely had some League of Legends sessions where I just...
Oh, God. Let me ask you a question. Here's a question for you. Are people more abusive or less abusive at 5 o'clock in the morning?
It's less easy to deal with them because you're exhausted in your mental state, especially if you're like me, where I have a thing. I have a quirk about myself where I refuse to stop a game that has matches on a loss. So if I have a bunch of losses in a row, I more than likely, and I realize this about myself, I will more than likely continue to play until I win at least one, and then I'll be like, fine, that's it. That's all I needed.
Mr. Determinator.
That hasn't been an issue with Dragon Ball FighterZ. I've actually been kicking ass in that game. I basically played the combo challenges with every single character in the game and beat them all. And then I formed my team, took it to ranked, and out of the 56 games I've played at this point, I've won 44 of them.
Let me ask you a question. You're well-versed in Arc Systems fighting games. Do you find that there's a certain style to them that carries over from game to game to game that allows you to be better sooner because you recognize the pattern?
Yes. It's the fact that the game is so fast that it keeps up with me. What I mean by that, I was actually talking to one of my fellow writers about this today. I'm not good at games like Street Fighter because they're too slow. They're too methodical. They make me slow down to a rate that just feels sluggish and annoying.
Does Dragon Ball FighterZ have the same pixel perfect sort of thing in which, you know, you have to know exactly, you know, like in Street Fighter, professional Street Fighter people know to the pixel where all the moves are and how far they are and where the hitboxes are and all that stuff, so much so that when they make a patch, they instantly say, oh, they moved this and it's now this pixel instead of that pixel.
There are things like that in Dragon Ball FighterZ, but it's a little bit more forgiving than say, like, Guilty Gear. But there are things like that where you have to know where the hitbox is and you have to know where – you have to figure out, like, certain positioning for your characters. The combo that I know for Beerus actually requires you to whiff two particular moves in order to get the most damage out of it. And that was something I found out by sheer mistake. I missed the first hit on a basic combo and landed the second hit, and it did. And the result came out to about 15% more damage than if I actually landed that first hit. And that sounds super technical, but like it's just things I discover because I spend so much time on this stuff, just labbing it over and over again.
How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
I've been playing more of Trials in the Sky 3 and Oceanhorn. I'm trying to complete those games. They're long games, so it'll take a while. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Have you been playing Civ 6 at all?
No, I'm waiting for the expansion, and then I'll play that. But I have been following the developments and the stuff that's come out about it.
By the way, I must point out that the Polycast is going to be celebrating their 300th episode this coming Saturday. So you'll hear from me like 15 minutes, and I'm pretty sure Scott is going to have his 15 minutes as well.
Yes, I'll be in that episode, yes.
Yeah, it's the 300th episode, so they're having their little milestone. Well, we're creeping up on 500, so I'm going to have to see what I can do about that. As for me, you know, one thing, you know, it's really popular on Twitch right now, which I haven't been looking on Twitch, but Sea of Thieves has been getting a lot of attention because the closed beta is going on right now, and I watched some gameplay from Polygon, and I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of people are thinking that this is going to be the game to watch on Twitch, because it is that humorous, and you also have to watch people collaborating on boats that act like real boats. So yeah, they're finicky, and you know, I think 25% of the game I've watched of people have been them bailing out water, streaming in from the boat because they crash into something and there's a hole they have to repair. Just taking and bailing out water, and I'm thinking, don't they have bilge pumps? And I'm guess not. Is this before the age of bilge pump? But what I have been playing is L.A. Noir Remastered. And what the funny thing is, I stopped playing Bioshock Infinite. I haven't finished it yet. And the thing is that I'll finish it when I can. But it's not really interesting. The game just doesn't hold my interest. So I've been playing L.A. Noir, all the new episodes that were released for PS3 owners and that were released, you know. Everything's in it, and I'm going one by one. And I'm getting a lot of achievements. And thankfully, I know my stuff. I have not missed a single clue, and I have not missed a single question so far. And no, I have not been cheating. Or not cheating, but, you know, looking at the guide saying, oh, there's a lie. This is a... I really hate the good cop, bad cop cues method. It used to be doubt. I forgot. But now it's good cop, bad cop cues. So, yeah, it looks nice. It doesn't look it doesn't look that different from the Xbox 360 version that I played, which tells you how great the graphics were 7 years ago.
Are you going to jump into the VR version of it?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't have a VR headset, A. And I'd like to wait until... I am reviewing a game called... it's this game aboard a... It's like a walking simulator aboard a spaceship. I think it's called The Station. And I'm thinking, yeah, this screams... It used to be a VR game, or it is a VR game. Because of there's a certain way that VR games look. You have that sort of slight fisheye for everything. Like when you pull up these holographic menus, they have that curve that tell me, yeah, this is supposed to be VR. So I would not be surprised if I looked it up and found that it was a VR game. Yeah. There's also another game that's basically a Railroad Tycoon type of game. I haven't been playing it. It's coming out on tomorrow, actually. And I'm going to start it as soon as I finish L.A. Noir. I'm waiting to get Monster Hunter because everybody's talking about it. Since that's the other game that everybody's been talking about at length. everybody wants to play Monster Hunter, and I think the fact that it's on multiple platforms now really helps it.
Yeah.
Now it's on the PC and it's on Xbox One. It's like everybody's playing it now.
PC not released yet. It's gonna take a minute.
Be on PC, but everybody's been talking about it.
Uh-huh. Well, it's big because this is the first time that Monster Hunter has come to PC.
Yeah. There's a lot of games that are
coming to PC. I guess I'm the only one that's just not interested in that game.
What?
It's an interesting thing to get into. Like, you really got to...
I've seen an equal amount of people love it and an equal amount just hate it.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. I just not into it.
I was pretty neutral to it for a while too. The only thing that pushed me into getting this one is that I have a lot of friends that are that are going to be into that. And it does seem like that kind of game where if you're on the ground floor with other people, it feels like it's going to be more fun. I've heard a lot of people say that it sucks going solo.
Here's the thing: Aliens Colonial Marines is fun when you play co-op, and that's a terrible game. So you have a good game. Co-op just makes it that much better. And the fact that there's sort of like Cabela's Hunter, you know, in which you have to do extensive research to hunt a monster. When you're doing it with friends, it is that much more fun, which is the same thing with Sea of Thieves.
Hmm.
Oh, God, you know, all of us should play Sea of Thieves. And even if you don't have
that,
an Xbox
that
one,
looks interesting.
It's Play Anywhere, so all you need is Windows 10 if you want it, because it's also cross-buy. So if you get it on Windows 10, you'd be able to play with Xbox One players. Neat. I will say this. Sea of Thieves is absolutely gorgeous. The water effects are the best I've ever seen in any game. Ever. Look at the water, and it looks like someone took a full motion video and just plopped on the water, but no. It splashes off your boat. It reflects when you have a sunset or sunrise, which is also gorgeous. You know, the only thing I wonder about is staying power. You know, I mean, Guns of Icarus is proof that, you know, that kind of game can survive. But I'm pretty sure Microsoft has a lot going on it and will have regular updates in which new things start popping up. It's also...
Yeah, he's going to keep inventing...
Go ahead.
Just for me, the reason why I'm kind of not too into it is you're fighting boss monsters constantly, and for me intensity. I need to space out those things. Even Dark Souls spaces out boss battles.
Now you're talking about Monster Hunter, right?
Yes, I'm talking about Monster Hunter.
Okay.
You're given like 50 minutes, go hunt this monster boss thing, or you fail completely. You know, and for my time investment, if I'm going to spend an hour, I want some progress. I don't want to fail and be like just all of the attempts wasted.
Scott, have you ever played World of Warcraft?
Yes, this is exactly
the point. Then you know exactly what it's like, because you spend 2 hours going in a raid or something like that, you know, or in an instance, spend 2 hours doing all these tiers just to get to the final boss. Oh, you got killed. Boom. Go back to the beginning of the instance.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That game was so bad at that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of gun shy about Monster Hunter, because it's a little bit like that. And yeah. I just don't have the time to waste like that. And I just
Monster Hunter does have like different quests where like they have different difficulties. So, like, you don't have to take on the biggest, baddest-ass monster and waste 50 minutes in something that you know you're going to lose. You can.
I want to face something that's really, really tough in a co-op situation. Because if we fail, it's just like, okay, let's do this again. Let's just dig our nose at a grindstone. You know, failure is great in that sort of game to me. I don't always want to beat the hardest thing, because when I do, I say, okay, that's it.
That's it takes away some of the mystique if you can just do it, but at the same time, I understand valuing your time. I completely understand where Scott's coming from.
This is why he plays League of Legends, folks, because that is such that likes your time so much. You know, that and Dota. They're such quick games.
That's a fair criticism.
Rainbow Six Siege is those are just like Counter-Strike missions, you know? Really fast.
Yes. Although your criticism of me was fair. I do like League of Legends, and that game does not respect my time.
Hey, I know the guys, you know what? Next, if you're going to E3 again, what's it called? I'll see, hopefully Riot Games will have another party. Because here's the thing. Whenever they have a party, it's like great beer and bar food, and you just bullshitting with the developers of League of Legends. Even though I don't play it, they're genuinely really nice people and great to know. So if they have another party, I'll let you know. And what's it called? And it'll be like me introducing you. Hey, wait, you know, have you ever did that that interview with the Rainbow Six Siege guy that I introduced you to?
I'm waiting for the time. With the league right now, because that's what the focus of my outlet is at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyways, we're gonna move on to the news. The first news item. Go ahead, TJ.
Sega teams up with Heavy Rain lead designer's new studio to publish narrative-driven game from Eurogamer. Sega has announced that it will publish the first project from Interior Knight, a new studio founded by ex-Quantic Dream lead designer Carolyn
Marshall.
Carolyn Marshall. Interior Knight was established last October, and the London-based studio will focus on creating narrative games aimed at a mature TV audience. Marshall stated in an interview her love of shows like Breaking Bad and Fargo, saying, "That's a good narrative drive. Then on top of it, there are lots of likable or dislikable characters, but they all have an edge, they all have flaws, and they all have very interesting, and they are all very interesting. I like dark characters. My favorite endings are where everyone dies."
Yeah, well, that basically describes a Quantic Dream game now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Sega says it won't be discussing Interior Knight's first project just yet, but Marshall's role as lead game designer on Quantic Dream's Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls will likely offer some clues as to the studio's eventual output. Joining Marshall at Interior Knight is a team of industry talent drawn from the likes of Quantic Dream, Sony, and Slightly Mad Studios. Sega recently announced the fruits of another publishing partnership with a UK developer, Two Point Studio. The team of X-Bullfrog and Lionhead Studios staff are working on Two Point Hospital, a theme hospital spiritual successor to be released later this year. Quantic Dream has also been in the news as of late when David Cage and Guillaume de... Oh my god, that last name.
Guillaume de... Don't worry, it's a Frenchy name. Just continue.
Were accused of inappropriate behavior, overworking staff, and colluding in, or at least turning a blind eye to, a schoolboy culture involving sexist and racist jokes, according to French newspaper Le Monde.
Le Monde. The world. That means the world.
The most shocking images present Quantic Dream's collaborators in sexual positions, adorned with homophobic or sexist slurs, even made up to look like Nazis.
That's so charming.
Yeah.
Now, here's the question. I wonder if Carolyn Marshall started her own studio just to get away from that.
I'm certain she did, because it sounds like a terrible place to work. But don't worry, everybody. David Cage has worked with homosexuals and black people, so it's fine.
Ellen Page is a lesbian. That means David Page is not homophobic. Yeah, I threw that in there because we never really discussed the legal issues that's going on with Quantic Dream. But I know that you, DJ, have a love for these sort of games, like with the serial killer game that's sort of like a David Cage game, but it's not.
Oh, geez, you're thinking of Until Dawn?
Yeah,
which is not a David Cage game, but
it is done in the style of.
Yes, it's a great David Cage game that's not a David Cage game.
So, I didn't like Heavy Rain and I didn't like Beyond Two Souls, but I know a lot of people who did. And Heavy Rain started the QuickTime event adventure game, which is basically what the Batman Telltale series is. Oh, that's another game I just played. And
I don't think you can make that statement.
What?
because when that game was being developed, they were asked, oh, are there going to be QuickTime events? So QuickTime events were a thing before Heavy Rain. I remember a fan of the game was asking about that, if they were going to be in there. And they were like, oh, no QuickTime events. And then, of course, there's QuickTime events.
I'm just saying, Quantic Dream loves doing that. And usually those kind of games are now called Heavy Rain type games. Like Jurassic Park, the Telltale game, was called Heavy Rain with dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. But, you know...
this wasn't called Dark Souls with dinosaurs.
If there's anything you can expect out of a Quantic Dreams game, it's that there's going to be QuickTime events, and eventually David Cage will tell you how many pages the script has.
Or how brilliant he is, even though his writing is just poor. His writing is really bad. He's like... He and Hideo Kojima should collaborate on a script just to see what... Oh, and Suda 51 as well, just to see what kind of insanity they would pop up
with. Oh, my God.
David Cage would come up with all the violence, Hideo Kojima would come up with all the conspiracy theories, and Suda 51 would include phallic references. And you know, Suda 51, is Suda 51 involved with the new Travis Touchdown game?
I am almost certain that he is.
Yeah, but he was also quick, the developers were also quick to say it's not a sequel to anything. It just has the character of Travis Touchdown.
Yeah. It's not a sequel, everybody. Quit calling it a sequel. It just has the character that you love in a new game. That's not the same one.
Yeah, I also enjoyed Theme Hospital back in the day, because I remember people... These patients are coming in with the squits, or people are coming in with bloaty head, and in order to cure the people with bloaty head, you have to pop their heads with a giant darning needle. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, did you ever play it? Scott?
No.
It's Dungeon Keeper, but in a hospital.
Sounds terrible.
It's actually kind of fun, but you know, here's the thing. It's funny. It's a funny game, which is hard for a real-time strategy game to be. It's just very dry British humor. And as usual, it's not the Dungeon Keeper narrator, but it's a nurse narrator. And all her announcements are really funny. So if you ever get a chance, play Theme Hospital. So I'm looking forward to Two Point Hospital. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that.
Hmm.
So here's a question. Are you looking forward to whatever Interior Nightmare comes up with?
Yes, I think that might be good. I like narrative games.
TJ is just palming his hands right now and just wondering what kind of demented stuff they're going to come up with that he's going to enjoy. He's probably hoping that it involves another serial killer.
I mean, I'm looking at this like she really likes Breaking Bad, and she really likes Fargo, and she really likes dark, horrible games.
Dark, horrible people.
Yeah. So
everybody dies.
I mean, the thing I really question is, will they have like the wherewithal and the design to put it together with a new team?
You know, the funny thing is that they're probably not going to have Sony breathing down their backs, which is a good thing. Because
no, they'll have Sega.
But Sega and Sony are two different companies. And when you have a company, you know, here's the thing. When you have a second-party game, like Quantic Dreams has been doing, it's sort of like Sony, you know, there's no patch. You know, they want their exclusives. They don't want... So it's like, spit it out right away. It's sort of like the Order 1886. Sort of like, make it as pretty as possible. We don't give a shit about gameplay, you know? Here...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Sega are the same people who publish games with really complicated plots. Alpha Protocol springs to mind. You know, they do a lot of games that... weren't they the ones who were the publishers of the physical version of Pillars of Eternity? I'm not sure. I know they've signed on some of the Kickstarter games, right? So at least whatever their new game is going to be, it's probably going to be experimental, a little bit deviating from the formula of Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls.
I mean, this is the company that saw someone making a better game with their original IP, and they were like, well, let's go ahead and hire that guy.
That actually sounds good, yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Sonic Mania. That happened.
Yeah. Sonic Team sucks. I mean, Sonic Mania has its problems, you know, but at least they're not game-breaking problems. You know, the problems
with problems
Sonic
everyone
Mania,
is okay
the problems
with
Sonic Mania is, like, they're extending levels for a game that only had a 10-minute timer because it had to be there. I mean, Sonic... Did anybody ever approach in the original Sonic the 10-minute timer? No. You know?
Nah.
But there are so many branching paths in Sonic Mania, you know? But like I said, it's a fan game, and it's great, and, you know, whatever problems it has, at least it's from the standpoint of they give a fuck. Mm-hmm. You know, they put in too much. Rather than Sonic Boom, it was they're lazy as fuck.
Yeah.
Or is it Sonic Boom or Sonic Blast? Sonic Boom.
It's all of them.
Whatever.
It's all of them outside of Sonic Generations and Sonic Colors.
Yeah, but that's a case in which they're saying we're just going to remake Sonic, which is fine. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Rainbow Six Siege tweet suggests upcoming PS4 Pro and Xbox One X support. And this comes to us from Rock Paper Shotgun. Speaking on the game's official Twitter, the Rainbow Six Siege team have suggested that the tactical shooter is in line for a PS4 Pro and Xbox One X support in the future. Though no specific details were given, Ubisoft responded to a fan stating upgrades for the beefier consoles were definitely, quote-unquote, on the roadmap. This makes sense given that the 4K textures pack was released for the PC version of Siege way back in 2015. No doubt a similar boost will be given to the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X editions, with improvements made to resolution, textures, lighting effects, and HDR. On February 13th, Ubisoft are also releasing three new editions of Siege, now in its third year of door-kicking, floor-destroying mayhem. The complete, advanced, and gold editions of the game come with all the maps and modes to date. I was going to say mods. Are there a lot of mods for Rainbow Six Siege?
No, there aren't.
Yeah, it's a heavily controlled game. I wouldn't. Along with various bonuses, the gold edition also includes a pass for all year 3 content, whereas the complete edition will throw in 16 operators from years 1 and 2, all raring to get a shot through paper-thin walls. Rainbow Six Siege is now available on PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
I think Rainbow Six Siege is, I don't know, but I thought it was this game that I saw them do machinimas with, and they were playing these two spies, I think Bob and Steve, and they were screwing up on missions and whatnot.
It's extremely possible. I haven't seen that one.
I think I might get on
Adam Sessler's show X-Force or X. I don't remember what the heck it was called. It's a game review thing.
All I know is Red and Blue. That's the extent of video game machinima that I know of. And gamer poop. By the way, when I'm playing L.A. Noire, sometimes in certain scenes I can't take them seriously because I remember the gamer poops about them. So anyways, I might consider getting the Gold Edition when it comes out because, you know, like I said, the game that was released 2 years ago is not the game that was released now. And I think I discussed this with you either in the podcast last week or just with you off podcast, in that a lot of people are starting to look at Rainbow Six Siege and say, hey, this is not the shit game we saw, remember, from launch. Whether it was actually a shit game or not, it's like it had such a negative reputation the first few months, and now it's like people are really taking it seriously.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what they built it for from the base up. They built it to be improved upon. They built it to be to continually be able to build upon it, and they literally built the game from day one with the idea that they were building an esports arena, and the idea behind that.
Yeah, here's the thing: Ubisoft started saying, "Oh shit, we're losing people," so they told the dev team, "Listen, you know what? We're gonna want you to talk to the players directly," and that's how it started. Because I know that you know this very well, the developers are always in contact with the players and getting their feedback.
Yeah. And from day one, it was going to be something that they were going to build for the long haul to just like become this esports arena for not only just like casual competitive play. That's a big part of it too, is making sure that everybody at the base level will enjoy it as well. But in its prime and at its best, a good esports game that can carry itself and attract players and viewers.
Well, let me ask you a question. Which is your favorite operator these days?
My favorite will always be Thatcher on attack. He has electromagnetic grenades that take out cameras and take out everybody else's equipment.
How big are cameras in this game? And knowing where everybody's location is must be.
They're absolutely paramount to the defense and being able to track your enemies, track the attackers, and keep an eye on where they are and figure out where they're coming from. Information is everything in Rainbow Six Siege. Information is practically as important, if not more so, than bullets.
You know, it's just... Here's the thing. I used to play Counter-Strike, you know, before it became just really a fuck-ton shit mess, right? And, yeah, information was important in that game because everybody played Dust, and you always had to know, are we going to go through the tunnel, or are we going to try and get around that? And you know where the other people are coming from. So... I get the impression that Rainbow Six Siege is a lot the same way, you know.
Very much so. The more you know about where the enemy is at any given time, the better the edge you have.
It's going to be interesting to see what the Year 3 content is going to be like. Like I said, no one thought there was going to be Year 3 to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's now in, as you said before, for the long haul. Anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, it's only going to keep growing. The league for it is doing well. They've I think they reached over $1 million pot last year on their prizes.
You know, I just want to see. I remember that ESPN was airing airing Injustice 2 battles. It'll be interesting to see if they start airing other stuff like Rainbow Six Siege. I was shocked to see Injustice 2 on ESPN. I was like, what?
Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on to the next time. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Microsoft's Mixer streaming tripping. This is from Eurogamer.
Wait, say it
Mixer,
again.
Mixer, Microsoft's streaming
service. Stop. You cut out, so do it over again.
Microsoft's Mixer streaming service to get Twitch-style tipping. This is from Eurogamer. Mixer, Microsoft's streaming service Twitch rival, is getting a couple of familiar features in the months ahead. Direct tipping will be added so viewers can give money to channel owners. Direct purchases options are also on the way, so you can quickly buy a digital download of the game or DLC which is being broadcast. The latter option will apply just to games available via Microsoft's own store to begin with, across Xbox One and Windows 10. Mixer is still a long way behind Twitch in viewers, but is steadily growing in audience, helped, of course, by the fact that Microsoft has made Mixer the de facto streaming option for games across its platforms. On Xbox One, Mixer comes baked into the Xbox One dashboard. 10 million users now watch Mixer per month, Microsoft has said. This seems like a brilliant way advertising revenue for Microsoft to sell games via the people playing them. It's brilliant there.
It's kind of annoying to me that, you know, I have to go through hoops just to use Twitch on the Xbox One. Because if you have to, because streaming options were immediately Mixer. Okay, Mixer. It's kind of skeezy. It reminds me of the Explorer fiasco from a few years ago, or actually 10 years ago. But it's fine. It's their console. But it's nice that, you know, people can get tipped, you know. And I think Microsoft is trying to say, you know, if you want to make money, that YouTube thing, you know, they're screwing you over. Why not go to us? And we're not going to punish you like YouTube does. 'Cause
man, how fast was Twitch to just be like, hey, you know what? Them YouTube boys, they ain't so good. We are. You ought to come over.
Definitely.
I mean, you'll have people like the Shadow of War guys doing their live streams on Twitch, you know, and you'll see Yahtzee doing live streams on YouTube. You know, but now it's just basically the large people who are doing their streams on YouTube simply because it's so large. Here's the thing. I often use Twitch or Mixer, sometimes as background noise. I'll put in a game that I'm really interested in but I don't own. and I'll just put it on my TV, and while I'm doing other stuff, I'll listen to them playing. You know, here's the thing, Mixer and Twitch are often a way to decide if I want to get an indie game, you know, because indie games are $5, but I really don't want to waste on $5 on something that I'll end up hating. So I'll see the gameplay on Twitch or Mixer and say, oh, okay, it looks fun.
Yeah. I haven't had an Xbox since 360, and I think that was before Mixer was along, so I don't have much to say about it.
No, Mixer, yeah, I think was an invention with the Xbox One. But do you watch stream things just as like background noise? Oh, what am I saying? You play League of Legends. You watch League of Legends, I'm pretty sure. Or do you not like watching matches of League of Legends?
I don't like watching it. I like playing it. I don't really like watching other people play it that much.
I know people who are really into watching tournaments. Actually, what's funny is that one of the streams that I really got involved, you know, this one particular broadcast was a Pokemon Championship thing in which people were playing on their Game Boy Advance, maybe 3DS. I'm not sure. I don't remember the game, but it was like we were watching and someone got, you know, barely escaped a match by making him double faint, you know? It's like he was almost out, and then he just did a hit that was super, super effective and got him to faint twice. It's like, wow. I tweeted about that. And it's rare that I'll tweet about a Pokemon match.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, you can find nearly anything on Twitch these days, whatever you feel like watching, especially Fortnite. That is one thing I like watching is Fortnite matches.
Do you like watching PUBG?
I like watching Fortnite a lot more because people are building structures as they go, and there's a lot of interesting things they do. So a Battle Royale match came down to two people in this one match I saw, and instead of shooting their opponent to death, this player built a wall around them and then built traps on the wall and then walled them in with the traps and just ran away and let it kill them. And I thought that is like, it's so clever and yet at the same time just like so sneaky and awful.
There was a shooter that actually allowed that had zombies in it, but it was human versus human. And people would throw bait at the other people to get the zombies to attack them, you know. But, you know, I watched PUBG, and I played a little bit of PUBG, and I was saying, wait a minute. This is just a deathmatch game, but there's a lot of people, and it's a really large area. That's all it is friggin' deathmatch. That's all it is.
Yeah, I don't understand people's fascination with that game.
And the reason why the map shrinks is because if you have two people left, they're just going to try and snipe each other, and that's kind of boring. So, yeah. I mean, he caught up on a concept that someone was going to do, and I'm waiting for someone to do it even better. You know, I wonder if Microsoft is looking at that and saying, you know, we could do this with Halo, because we've always had massive levels in Halo. So let's see what happens if we have a game with Halo with 64 players and then just have the map shrinking. I mean, there's no crafting involved, but, you know, Halo's always been about vehicles anyway.
I had I had some interesting talks with people today. There's a lot of games that can be that the Battle Royale system can be applied to. And one interesting one that came up, and I want to get your take on this, Jonah. What if you took the RPG mechanics, like the scaling damage out of it, and made the Division a Battle Royale?
You see, the thing with Division, it's more of an exploration game. That's my biggest complaint about L.A. Noire. They should not have you going around during a case, because while you're allowed to not, you know, you can, it always feels off if, oh, there was a murder here and there's a naked woman, you have to go investigate. No, I'm just going to go to the other side of the city and look for landmarks. You see the problem there? You can do it, but it doesn't feel right. You're a policeman. Yeah, I'm just going to look for, oh, there's a car that I haven't driven yet. Let me stop in the middle of the case and just do that.
It's, to me, it's no different than Skyrim or Zelda, where you have a mission, but you decide to go do these side quest things instead.
But Scott, the difference is that this is a real world, and you're playing a real policeman, and LA is so lovingly rendered, you know?
It is.
You get caught up in the idea of you being a cop, and a cop's not going to say, oh, well, that body can just sit there for a couple of hours while I go over here and go and look for the Hollywood sign. It doesn't feel right.
No, you know? he says,
maybe,
I don't
maybe
know, he has some questionable things anyways, but
you don't have to go do that stuff, and it's, you know, it's totally optional. So if you don't want to go find Golden Record, then don't find it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In Skyrim, well, that's Mafia 2. Mafia 2 is even more streamlined. I don't even know why they bothered making it an open world. But, you know, I would like, just have it, just have, give Cole Phelps or Jack Kelso some downtime between missions so that you don't feel like I should be doing this murder case. You know, when you cases go cold if you leave them alone, and even though that doesn't happen in the game, you feel pressured, you better do this case, because there's a woman there who's naked out in the open with a press around her, snapping photographs, and her body is rotting. No, I'm just going to go over to San Pedro for a while. You know, they should have it so that you can have things that are in between cases so that you can laze around and do the extraneous stuff. Because they represent L.A. perfectly, but I really don't have time to explore it because I'm busy doing murder cases. Maybe during the arson cases, I won't feel as pressure to do them. Yeah, the building burned down, but so what? The building is still going to be burned down later. What?
Yeah, so nobody cares about the building.
Yeah, I mean, the building burned down. So what? It's not going to fix itself.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty.
Speaking of esports.
FIFA eWorld Cup forced to switch to Xbox due to PSN outage. From US Gamer. If you had trouble connecting to the PlayStation Network last week, you weren't alone. According to reports, the PSN outage affected more than just your weekend Monster Hunter World games. The FIFA eWorld Cup, which took place over the weekend, had to completely switch platforms from PS4 to Xbox One as a result of the outage. Foothead.
It's football. Football.
I see. Foothead, a site that reports on all things FIFA Ultimate Team, tweeted during the eWorld Cup that the PSN outage forced the tournament organizers to switch over to the Xbox as the main platform for the remainder of the event. Foothead cited logistics for the broadcast arrangements and venue lease as the reason why the tournament couldn't just wait for PSN to come back online. This is another blow to Sony as a result of its service interruptions. The platform has been suffering unplanned PSN outages all last week, and now performance issues have disrupted a major tournament. While the previous week has been a highly unusual one for Sony, It begs to ask whether this will affect any console agreements for broadcast esports and future events if PSN continues to suffer from unplanned disruptions.
You know, here's the one thing that Microsoft has over Sony, and Microsoft's always been about software and internet connectivity. That's their job. That's all they've done before they even had an Xbox. You know, and that's the problem with Sony and PSN. I mean, we all remember when hackers decided to just raid everybody's accounts and take their credit card numbers, you know, for the outage, which Sony tried to pretend it was just a maintenance, no, not for a week. And it's just like, Sony has to get their act together with PSN. This is not a new problem with them.
Yeah, it's most definitely something, especially as esports continues to grow, which it's going to continue to grow exponentially. They have to get their act together as far as this goes. Like, if people see this as an unreliable thing, they're going to rely on other things. They're going to go to PC or Xbox in any case where it's warranted.
Well, that's just it. It isn't unreliable. And, you know, in order to change it, they're going to have to change the way their servers interact and all that stuff, because it's always been peer-to-peer. You know, and that's how hackers have exploited Sony, by exploiting the fact that they do peer-to-peer sort of stuff, you know, which allows for a lot of things, but it also makes you more vulnerable, and also crashes will happen, you know. And I wonder how much it would cost to change their entire structure of their online network, to redo it from scratch.
Probably a lot. Yeah, that might be one of the reasons why they're having so much trouble to fix these. If they have to redo everything, that would be very costly.
I mean, it's not like Xbox Live doesn't go down, but here's the thing. It goes down so infrequently that you'll hear complaints loud, and when it happens to PSN, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, another outage. Whatever. They're so used to it. I mean, Scott, you own a PS. You own a PS4. Although, yeah. You don't really do online gameplay, but...
No, I just play my game offline, single player, and I don't remember it going down anytime recently, but I guess if it has, it has.
Do you do stuff like Netflix, or...?
Yeah, we'll do Netflix on there. Sometimes we'll use the Chromecast, and a lot of times we'll use the PlayStation, you know, depending on whenever we want to. But yeah, I think we mostly use it for Netflix lately.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I haven't had too many crashes or offline issues.
You know, I really hate the Xbox One YouTube app. Google has to improve that thing, because it is buggy as hell and it irritates the heck out of me. Because I don't watch much TV anymore. I watch YouTube.
Yeah, I don't watch TV either. I stream stuff. YouTube, Hulu, Netflix.
CBS, yeah. To watch Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, we haven't done that yet. I guess. I don't know.
Guess what? You know, I would wait until they start releasing DVDs, because it... Okay, I haven't been watching, but from what I understand, to retcon all the shitty episodes that have led up to it, they're going to reveal that it was actually in the Mirror Universe the entire time. Which
they are in the Mirror Universe.
What?
They are in the Mirror Universe right now. And
no, I mean, from the very start, it was the Mirror Universe. That it was actually the Mirror Universe all along, rather than them going into the Mirror Universe. And what's going to happen is something like they're going to go into our universe. It's like all sunshiny and bright because we're not depressing and, you know, on Red Letter Media, they said, Rich Evans said something very important, is that when you watch Star Trek The Next Generation, you feel good about yourself, you know, because it's a hopeful future. You know, you'd want to live in that universe. Who the fuck would want to live in the Star Trek Discovery universe? He says that after he watches an episode of that, he feels worse.
Yeah. It's very dark, and I think that was the whole point of Star Trek, was to have a hopeful future, an ideal to live up to, but apparently that's just not realistic enough for people, and they want to see grim and backstabbing.
Yeah, dark and still hopeful. I mean, that's what a DS9 was about. It wasn't exactly the most cheerful location, but, you know, you never doubted Sisko's intentions. Oh, except for in the pale moonlight, in which...
Yeah, except for that episode.
but that's because it was really out of character for him, and he's dealing with the consequences of his actions and that. For those of you who don't know, in the pale moonlight, if you haven't seen it, watch it. Even if you haven't watched DS9, it's a great episode. And it's also my favorite episode with Garak in it.
Yes. Very good episode.
And you find out how scary he can truly be to certain people. It's like, oh, Garak, you're here. I'll do this right away. Yeah, that and Children of Time. Even though Children of Time is a really depressing ending, that's my favorite DS9 episode.
Oh, yeah.
Children of Nine, that's the one in which they meet their time. Okay, so here's the thing. What's it called? Quick recap. This is not a Star Trek podcast, although I wouldn't mind starting one. What happens in Children of Time, they land on a planet where they find their ancestors because when they left the planet, they went back in time and got stranded, and they had to start over again, and several generations pass, And, you know, Kira dies because she was wounded in the accident, but they couldn't get her to a medical facility. So you have Odo there, and he doesn't look like a flat face. He actually has a more human face because he's had several hundred years to practice. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to spoil the ending of that one, but it's a really depressing episode. Because it's one of those episodes in which an old Trek, they would have the take the third choice option, which is actually presented in the episode. But they find out, no, that's a lie. So you actually have a decision to make. There's no longer you can have your cake and eat it too. No, you have to make this decision or that decision, you know, which I really liked. Because in Star Trek, they always have that scientific answer. Oh, we're just going to split our bodies into two halves, and one half will go back, and the other one will go home. And, you know, and they find out, nope, that's not an option. You can't cheat your way out of this one. And that's why I love that episode so much, because it takes a look at some of the, you know, deus ex machina that Star Trek sometimes comes up with. So, TJ, do you have a favorite DS9 episode, or no?
I haven't watched any of DS9. I watched the original series, and then I watched Next Generation, and okay. I kind of fell off after Next Generation.
You know what's funny? I'm pretty sure, Scott, did you like the episode in which you have Jake Sisko getting older and older and older because his father's
quite a time warp? Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that was a really sad one, even though things wrapped up.
It was.
Because you find out that Jake can't deal with life without his father.
Well, losing him at such a young age, and he was actually starting to get over it until his father Sisko showed up.
Yeah.
And that's when he became obsessed, and then he had to find a way to bring his dad back, and it just became an obsession.
I also like there
was a lot of good DS9
episodes. I like the way
Gul
Dukat, in the very last episode, when Kai Winn yells, "Emissary, the book!" And Gul Dukat looks at her, and he says with so much venom, "Are you still here?" And then evaporates her. And then he says, "Farewell, Adami."
Yeah.
I just loved that. That was the most great villainous moments of the series. Just the way he just dismisses her, says, "Yeah, whatever. You're worthless. You think you're going to be the emissary of the Pares? No, 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 no. No, sorry. You're fooling yourself. It's me they wanted the entire time, so go screw yourself and die." By the way, I met Sir Clofton a year ago. And what's it called? And I asked a question, and it lasted for like an hour. And I asked him about how Avery Brooks affected his life. And I knew that he affected him in a big way. And he was just emotional about how Avery Brooks was like a surrogate father to him. And when he was having problems with his parents, you know, he was there for him. I wish I could have recorded it. Maybe someone recorded it. I don't know. But he was really passionate. It was really touching to hear him talk about it. Yeah. I also met Nana Visitor, who played Kira Nerys, and she's a Broadway babe now. She is like one of those women in their late 50s who've been in Broadway musicals all their life. That's what the kind of person she is now. Very open and flighty. I also met Denise Crosby. And the way she dresses, she looks like a granola girl. She has all the things, like the crystals around her neck and the Native American, what's it called, thing. Anyways, we're talking too much Star Trek right now, which tells me at some point we're going to have to do an off episode in which all we do is distress Star Trek. Here's the thing. Some of the bonus episodes, I don't know if you ever heard them, were Jordan and Paul and Jordan's wife, Jennifer, talking about Doctor Who, the entire season of Doctor Who. I don't watch Doctor Who, so I didn't get involved. All I did was listen and produce the episodes. So I didn't say anything. I just, you know, recorded them. At some point, we're going to have to do something like that. And I have
will
to
you
find
watch
something.
What? Well, I was going to ask TJ if he would watch Deep Space Nine despite Jonah's spoilers.
Actually, you know, we can talk about classic TNG.
I tuned out for a little bit when you guys started talking about Star Trek, but
I mean, talking about TNG, I mean, everybody, you know, here's the thing. We can pick a specific episode and talk about that episode.
Well, I always
go ahead.
I've always been partial to the what is it called? I always forget the name of those little things.
Skin of Evil. Skin of Evil is the one in which Tasha was killed by the tar monster.
Trouble with Tribbles.
Oh, that's original series.
There's yeah.
Also, you missed. Did you see the DS9 episode, which had the crew going back to that episode? And you found out why, say, the Tribbles kept on falling on Kirk's head. It's because two of the crew members were in the thing above him and tossing Tribbles out. You also had that moment in that episode. I forgot the name of the episode, DS9 episode. But they come upon the Klingons of the old series, and they all look at Worf. And Worf just says, "We don't like to talk about that." So you could have had that important question of when the Klingons go from swarthy guys with Fu Manchu mustaches to the forehead-ridged, darker-skinned Klingons.
You do get that answer in Enterprise, the TV show
Enterprise. Enterprise sucks. The only episode I liked of that was the last one, only because it was a continuation of the Pegasus, which is another episode of TNG I liked. And the Pegasus, for those you don't know, was the one in which Riker had his captain, and they had the phasing starship. And
they were trying to develop their own cloak.
Yeah. And the Federation last episode of Enterprise was about Riker going back to the ship, you know, doing a holosuite thing in which he was among the crew, trying to figure out what he was going to do regarding his old captain and Picard. And a lot of Enterprise fans hated it because, you know, it got hijacked by TNG. But my response is, well, TNG is a better show. People would rather watch TNG than they would Enterprise.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, when I first booted up Enterprise, as soon as they had that power ballad, I said, I'm done. It's been a long, long time. I'm done. I'm done. I don't care about the show. And by the way, Scott Bakula turned out to be a bad captain in terms of the actor using him, because all he does is mumble. It's good if your brain is like Swiss cheese in Quantum Leap. It's not good when you want to be a starship captain like Janeway or Picard or Avery Brooks, who aren't exactly mumblers, or Kirk for that matter. They will let you know what they think. All Scott Bakula can do is a mild pissed. I don't know what's happening. No. I don't care. Oh, no. That's when no one talks about Archer anymore. Wow, we talked a lot about Star Trek. So, yeah, we're going to have to figure out an episode to talk about. Let me know,
because I have access to it, too. I can rewatch.
Oh yeah, it's on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of the episodes are famous anyway. Like if I say, "Oh, let's watch Skin of Evil," we all know that's the episode in which Tasha dies.
Yeah.
Or if I say The Best of Both Worlds, oh, that's the one where Picard becomes Locutus and leader of the Borg. Although I will say I prefer the episode that was after it, which is considered Best of Both Worlds Part 3, which is called Family, in which you have the aftermath, like Wesley gets the hologram from his father. Picard goes back to France and talks to his brother Robert. You know, and Worf has Worf's human adoptive parents found out about his discommodation. It's very sad. And then the episode after that was Brothers, which was even better, which is when Lore came back. And the very last line of that episode is very haunting. You know, Brothers forgive. So you know, okay, I'll tell you right now, we're going to do a podcast spinoff, just one episode. It'll be Skin of Evil, because that's a season... Was it a season one episode? I think it was a season one episode. Yeah, it was a season one episode. But Denise Crosby told the people of Star Trek, "I want out, because this show is boring." And it's not helping me. So they wrote an episode in which she gets killed. We can discuss that episode.
Yeah, 23rd episode of the first season.
Yeah. And it was the first time that a major character was just killed off. And I'm not talking about Spock, because he came back. Tasha Yar never came back except for one episode in which she was in an alternate timeline.
She also came back in the finale.
Oh, yeah, but that, again, alternate timeline. her character never came back.
That wasn't alternate timeline. That was the main timeline. It was just the past.
No, it was all. They were all alternate timelines created by Q. Because for hell, you know, they never encountered that anomaly in the show. Right. And they hadn't even gone to Farpoint. Remember, they abandoned their mission to Farpoint to investigate the anomaly.
My point is, the actress does come back, and she came back from more than one episode.
Yeah, but the character never came
Saylar.
Back. No, that's her daughter, Sayla.
But she's still that. I'm talking about the character of Tasha.
Never comes back. She stayed dead.
Right.
What's funny is that the Yesterday's Enterprise was created as a way to not give her a shitty death. But I like the fact that she had a shitty death. You know, Star Trek security that have shitty deaths all the time. She's no different.
Yeah.
She got offed. In a meaningless way, which is what Gene Roddenberry wanted. Although, what Gene Roddenberry wants isn't always the best. But I like the idea. Yeah, she's a cop. She got shot by a crook, basically. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me beating people's ass at Dragon Ball FighterZ at Johnny Chitz.
Are you going to be posting more more videos?
Definitely. Definitely.
I really did enjoy... Was that your video as Krillin beating someone up?
Yeah, I workshopped a really good Krillin combo as well.
That was really impressive. I always like seeing the underdog get played and shown that they could be just as successful as all the other characters.
At some point, have to do a Pokemon fighting game, a real one, not Pokemon Arena, which is just basically Pokemon with in 3D. No. Because they do it in Super Smash Brothers. It shows it's viable.
I made this argument once. Arc System Works should make everything.
Hey, look, NetherRealms does know how to make a fighting game. Come on.
I know, but I was saying Arc System Works should just go ahead and make everything. Not just anime, but like everything in the world. My Hero Academia, if Philadelphia Eagles win the Super Bowl, Roller Derby, the fighting game.
Anyways, we will see you next week, and we will try and do a little Star Trek spin-off discussion.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, have fun, play games, y'all.